At the intersection of heart and home, Gloria Hahn and the Hahn Team.
Welcome to Real Estate Today with the Hahn Team on 93.9 KPDQ.
This is Real Estate Today, sponsored by the Hahn Team on 93.9 KPDQ. I'm Mike Lee with the expert herself, Gloria Hahn of the Hahn Team, licensed in both Oregon and Washington with RE/MAX Equity Group. Make sure to follow Gloria Hahn Realtor on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And if you check out her website, GloriaHahn.com, you'll find the latest information plus podcasts of previous Real Estate Today programs. You can even call or text Gloria directly at 503-997-5745. That's 503-997-5745. And one of the things I love about you most, Gloria Hahn, is the fact that you're never done learning and you're always finding some wonderful experts to be guests on Real Estate Today. So who do we have now?
Today, I'm really happy to have our special guest, attorney Joe Kaufman, with us. Joe and I met on a sale that I did in Oregon City a few years ago. He was working on the probate and we just seemed to have that kind of connection, and he's done several more for me since then, or with me, however you want to put that. So thanks, Joe. I know you're busy, but thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
It'll be fun. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you before we get started?
Well, sure. Happy to. Well, I've been in practice since too long. I'll date myself. Since 1987, so quite a few years. Not always in estate planning law, and that is a part of my practice, but a big one. Mm-hmm. A lot of what I've done is business law related, so helping companies who are with buying and selling of their companies and vendor contracts, both inbound and outbound. And then as my clientele has aged, just like me, we got around to talking about estates and then how to plan for the future of the businesses and families. And so in the last, I'd say, 15 years, we've done a great deal of estate planning and trusts, but my background was kind of fun. I always wanted to be a business lawyer and kind of work on that side and not really be in court. And as it turns out, a lot of estate law is done in the office and helping people out, and we seldom go to court. It's really a lot of paper filing with the court, but we make sure to make it as easy as possible for our clients.
Sounds like a better thing than to be a criminal lawyer.
Well, you know, it takes a little bit of everybody to make the world go round. There's a place for that and as well.
Great. Well, I really appreciate you being here, because I know I've shared with you that so many times when I go in for a listing appointment, I'm going into a family that someone has just passed. They have no clue what to do next. Do we do probate? Do we have to do probate? All these things. And so I think if we help educate our listeners, you'll also educate me as to the basic things I can say. I am not an attorney, and I have to let them know that I cannot give them legal advice, and that's why I love to have someone like you that I can have them call to get the good information.
And I guess I should remind anybody listening that I can't provide legal advice over a radio show or over the telephone either. It's really a more personal way of, you know, doing things. You have to have a relationship with a lawyer to have that lawyer provide you expert advice or advice, because everybody's circumstances are different, although there's a lot of similarities.
Right, right. What motivated you to specialize in estate planning?
Well, like I say, it's sort of my practice has changed over the years, and so it sort of evolved. It wasn't actually so much of a plan as it was a need for my clients. So it started off just doing, well, simple wills, well, for my own family and for myself. I mean, if you've thought about how long, you know, you may have been thinking a long time about getting around to writing a will or a trust. And I mean, I'm kind of like the cobbler whose kids have no shoes. I mean, for a long time, it took me a long time to get my will and trust in order. I only did that about 9 years ago myself. So, you know, these things take time and we have to be thoughtful. But anyway.
Well, and I think the most important thing for people to realize is that it can be too late if you wait. And so many times I go into these homes and the person that owned the home doesn't even have a will. And that becomes a nightmare, right?
It is a real problem for families. I think the best thing you can do for your family and for yourself is to have a will or a trust, something in writing that lets people know what to do with your things after you're gone. And it's always good to have those conversations early, because what you'll find out is your family members may not want all the things that you have, even though that you cherish them. Everybody has different values and likes different things. So, And if that's the case, you may want to liquidate those things or give them as gifts to people who would care for them, of course.
Right.
If you pass away without a will in Oregon, it's called intestate succession, meaning you don't have any will, and the state of Oregon has a statute that will fill the gap. And essentially what that does is the whole idea of a probate is to distribute assets and settle any bills we leave behind. And so if you don't have a will, the state statute provides that it's to go to your closest next of kin. So if you're a married person and have children and your spouse is still alive, and should you die, everything goes to your spouse. If you happen to be in a previous marriage, your current spouse and any children you might have had of that previous marriage split everything 50-50. And that may not be what you want.
Right.
And then if your spouse has passed, of course, then the children of both marriages split everything 50-50. There's no specialized way that you can, give specific gifts that way. So if there's an intent to give a cherished family heirloom to somebody to keep it in the family and you haven't provided for that, well, this is the time to plan. Don't wait too long.
So does the state just appoint a person to handle it then?
Well, not exactly. No, the state doesn't actually ever really become involved except through the court process.
Okay.
If someone passes away without a will, usually a family member is stepping up to, settle their bills and distribute their estate. If there is no family member, then usually it's a creditor, because creditors have rights and they'll want to collect their money. They can start a probate in that event if there's just nobody. But usually it's just a family member who would probably see a lawyer. Oftentimes, folks don't know where to go, so they'll go to the courthouse, and then the clerks will tell them to kindly see a lawyer to get some help, because they're very busy at the window and they can't provide legal advice.
Right, right. Can you explain the difference between a will and a trust?
Yeah, they're often confused.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that a will, if you have a will, you don't have to go through any court process in order to distribute your things. So I'm happy to talk about the differences. So will is basically a legally binding document that you can enter into when you're of majority, so 18 years of age or older. You have to have competency in order to sign your will, and it has to be witnessed by at least two people, your signature, and then it has to be witnessed by two people who could say that you knew what you were doing, that no one was defrauding you, and that you intended to write a will. So that's what it's for. The will, like I said, explains who you are, who your family is, and then if you have specific gifts, who gets those things. And then if it's just generally to be divided among children or family members, then it can simply say that. There are some legal prerequisites that can be helpful when drafting a will. That's when a lawyer can be very helpful. Generally speaking, wills aren't too expensive. So if that is a fear of folks, they don't want to see a lawyer because, oh my God, I'm going to be very, very, charged a whole bunch of money, then, that's not exactly true. And certainly, there's tons of forms online, for wills. I don't think I would recommend most of them, at least, as the end all be all. Certainly they're great for direction and to give somebody the concept of what a will is. And you could play with it and say, walk it into a law office and say, oh, this is kind of what I want. But a lawyer here in Oregon or in Washington, for instance, they're going to know how to make the will work, with the laws of those states. And it's a pretty good thing to do. So the difference between a will and a trust then is, like I said, a will, in order to be effectuated, in order for it to be carried through after we pass, it has to be filed with the court along with a petition, a request of the court to have somebody appointed to be the responsible person in charge of their estate, the person who's going to pay the bills and then distribute things to people. That person's called a personal representative in Oregon. And so that process to probate a will, the process that takes the court to finally pay bills and distribute estates, commonly takes shorter than a year in most instances. But, you know, it sort of depends how many properties we have and how many assets there are, and if there's any dissension among family members, whether or not a probate will be finished within a year. But that's certainly the preference. And now a trust is a little different. A trust is just like a will in that it is a piece of paper. It's a document that's legally binding that you enter when you're of majority, 18 years of older and with competency. But the difference with a trust is you're basically inventing a fictitious person. And think of it as as an empty box. And you're placing all your things into this box, your house, the deeds to your house, your titles to your car, your bank accounts, everything should be part of the trust. And that trust, in that trust, you'll appoint yourself. You're called a grantor, person making the trust. You'll appoint yourself as both the trustee, the person in charge of the trust, the person who owns the box they have all your things in, and the beneficiary. So nothing really changes during your lifetime when you have a trust so far as ownership, except it's just a step removed. You own everything, you do everything with your property. But when we pass away, then the trust carries on. We don't, but the trust carries on. And so if we name our successor trustee, the person who will step into our shoes after we pass away, they basically inherit our job as the person who owns our box of things, and they follow our instructions about how to distribute those things. It's outside of a court, so you don't ever need to start a probate, but there is a requirement that all creditors be informed that someone's passed away so they can present bills. And then there's a duty to inform all the beneficiaries of the trust that it exists and that they might be getting something, and they have a right to see the trust. And that's the long and short of the process. Of course, it's a little more involved because you have to, you have to file final taxes and what have you. But it's, you don't ever go to court. So that's the big difference. A lot of people enjoy trusts because they're private documents. They don't really see the light of day unless there's a dispute or anything. So, they like the idea that, if you file a will and a probate court, well, it's public record. So if someone were truly interested, they could go look. I mean, generally, we'll leave that to celebrities and very, very famous people. But I don't think anybody's interested in what I have and where things are going. And that's generally the case for most folks. But if you do have a desire to make things private, well, that's the way to do it. There's other reasons for trust as well. I mean, if family members aren't well equipped to deal with the legal process, or have special needs or injuries or what have you that prevent them from, actively participating in that sort of a process, then a trust might be a good way of getting around having to go through those procedures. Now, I guess the give and take there is on cost of doing things. Like I said, it doesn't cost too much to create a will. It's on the lower side of expenses, so far as, practicing law is concerned. But if you do a trust, there's a little bit more involved. And so generally the costs of these things vary depending on circumstances. But if you do plan on doing a trust, you should be prepared to pay substantially more than if you were doing your will. And I guess the benefit of that is the benefit it gives to your family for not having to go through the probate process. And like I explained, if your family members have issues, then you've avoided having to deal with those and having to work with the court.
If you have a trust, is it complicated to manage it once you get it established? Is there anything in the management of a trust that we should know about?
So the great thing is not really.
It's really very easy.
So the main thing about managing a trust comes on the front end, and then after we pass, really. So on the front end of things, after you create a trust, we have to remember it's just a piece of paper that we sign saying, giving people our intent about what we intend to do. But it's very important that a trust be funded. And what I mean by that is you have to put those things that you own into the trust. Where we often, it's sort of heartbreaking to me that people will spend a great deal of money on a trust to avoid the cost of going through court, but they either haven't been advised of or they simply forget that they need to put all their things into the trust, into the box, as I was saying, that represents, you know, how you're holding your things. If you do forget, then you still have to have a probate because you didn't account for those things, essentially. But the administration is pretty simple. So, like I say, there's a notice that goes out to creditors, and then you have to find out if any taxes are owing. And after you pay the taxes and pay the bills, then you'll have some source of money or things to distribute. And that's about it. The tax part is, I shouldn't minimize, it is a burden. And sometimes if you're not intimately familiar with the person whose shoes you're filling, you have to get all their past financial records and what have you, and hopefully they're in good shape, or else it could be a real headache.
With offices in Oregon City and Estacada, you can call Attorney Joe Kaufman at 503-722-3850. That's 503-722-3850. And do check out his website, jqkaufmanlaw.com. That's jqkaufmanlaw.com. More with Gloria Hahn and Joe Kaufman next on Real Estate Today, sponsored by the Hahn Team. You're listening to 93.9 KPDQ.
At the intersection of heart and home, Gloria Hahn and the Hahn Team.
Welcome back to Real Estate Today, sponsored by the Hahn Team on 93.9 KPDQ. Mike Lee here, getting educated by my pal Gloria Hahn and her very special guest, Attorney Joe Kaufman. You can call his Oregon City office at 503-722-3850, which will also reach him in the Estacada office. That's 503-722-3850, and do check out the website, jqkaufmanlaw.com.
Welcome back. In our first segment, we talked about estate planning. We got to know Joe a little better. We talked about wills and trusts, which I'm sure we'll talk about those some more. But as we do a will and a trust, are there other documents and other things that we need to think about?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of people think estate planning is only a will.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be for some folks, but it's not recommended. There's always other documents you need when you're thinking about creating a will for yourself, or even if you're not. These things, you know, can be put in place easily. And essentially, they're a little formulaic, so they're lower cost to enter. So if you're holding back because of costs, don't do that. You know, get some help from an attorney or go online and find a form and then seek an attorney's advice. And the documents I'm talking about are powers of attorney, the Oregon Advanced Directive, and a HIPAA release. So kind of taking those in order, the power of attorney is a document where you name somebody who would speak for you or take care of your affairs in the event you became incapacitated and couldn't do these things yourself. A power of attorney can be lifelong, or you can put in a provision in it that says that it sunsets, that it ends at a certain period of time. So it's a notarized document, meaning, again, you have to be an adult over 18 years of age and competent to sign it. And you would sign it with a notary saying that, you know, that person witnessed you signing it, that you were who you were and you had your wits about you when you signed it. It's very important that powers of attorney be understood as not a will. A lot of people think a power of attorney is, well, makes them in charge of a person's estate after they pass away, which is not the case. That would be a mistake. Powers of attorney are only good for our lives. When we pass away, that power of attorney passes away with us, and it has of no more effect. I've had lots of instances where people who have served as powers of attorney go on after a person has passed away and have done unlawful things and inappropriate things with assets of right. some person's estate, sometimes intentionally, but most of the time by mistake, just thinking they have the authority to do it.
Right. I've had a lot of clients say, well, I have a power of attorney for my mom, so even after she passes, I can take care of these things. And I always say, you need to check with your attorney, because I believe powers of attorney stop when the person dies.
Right. They can also stop. You know, this often happens where people have named a power of attorney, and life, you know, happens. Things change.
Right.
So maybe you've moved away from the community where you first signed that power of attorney. So, you know, the person you've appointed is really not in a locality or a place where they can help you. Maybe their lives have changed and mm-hmm. they're not in a position to help anymore. So powers of attorney can be terminated by creating a new power of attorney, of course, that terminates the other one. If you have a power of attorney and you're unhappy with the person who's you've named, they can also be terminated by sending a letter to that person terminating the power of attorney. So you just have to let the person know who you appointed that it's over and they're not to serve any longer. So it's important to know you can start them and you can stop them.
There's not a form for that, though, right?
There's lots of forms for everything.
Oh, okay.
Of course, you could go online and find some. Again, though, they come in all shapes and sizes. So in powers of attorney, there's a durable power of attorney, and basically a power of attorney that would cover the waterfront about everything you could possibly need someone to, you know, step into your shoes and do. It would allow them to do just anything. If you want a more limited power of attorney, there's powers of attorney that are called limited powers of attorney. Very plain, but people don't think about that. If you can't do, say, specific things, but you don't need help doing everything, you could sign a limited power of attorney for just the help that you need. And you often see that in, you know, healthcare situations and right. what have you. And in financial situations, particularly, banks, I think, have forms. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to have someone be a power of attorney over your bank account, various bank institutions have their own forms. Okay. The important thing about a power of attorney, if you intend someone to use it, is to make sure that they have an original someplace where they can get it quickly if they need it. I don't advise that you give people powers of attorney after you've made them unless you intend that they use them, because sometimes that can cause problems if they jump in too quick and use them before you really intend to have that help. That's important to know. The other document we talked about, it was an advance directive. It's an Oregon mm-hmm. advance directive. In Oregon, it takes the place of what many states call a power of attorney for healthcare decisions, or power of attorney for healthcare. So in your advance directive, it's a form that the state legislature has adopted. It's statute driven, so it doesn't change very much. All the questions are the same, no matter where you pick up your advance directive from. You find them all over the place. Doctor's offices will have them, or they'll ask you if you have one. You can probably pick one up in the lobby of just about any hospital in town that you might visit, because you know what the importance of an advance directive is, that you're giving the medical personnel, the people who are serving your needs medically, some direction about how you're to be treated if you can't speak for yourself. And so let's examine that a little bit. When you have a advance directive, the point is that you appoint to one person at a time who will serve as your healthcare representative. That person is an advocate for you when you can't speak for yourself or in a position where you don't want to. And they advocate your wishes that you filled out on your advance directive. So let's say you want home care and that's really important to you. They would be there to intercede with the medical personnel to say they really want home care. Let's do everything we can do it's possible under the circumstances to keep a person at home and give them the freedom they want, you know, as long as that's possible. There's other folks who have some issues with what sort of medical services they want to be provided. Oftentimes with sharing of blood, for instance, is a big issue. And anyway, there's do not resuscitate orders. If you don't want, you know, just every conceivable thing done to keep you alive in different circumstances, then there's that. So the advance directive gives the medical personnel that direction and empowers somebody who would advocate for you in that way. Those also can be changed. If you, you know, if circumstances change, you just enter a new one. None of these things are set in stone, but everybody should have these things in place. The other thing we talked about was a HIPAA release. So HIPAA is an acronym, which I'm not going to remember all the words for, but I think it's commonly known as HIPAA. And if you're listening, your doctor's offices probably have had you sign a HIPAA release if you've seen them recently. I know my doctor has me sign one, a new one every year when I go see him. Essentially, HIPAA is a federal privacy act with regard to our medical records and any information about us from the medical side of the house. And when the doctors and nurses are not supposed to share any of our medical information with anyone except us, unless we permit them to. And so a HIPAA release is simply a document that you'd sign that lists the people that doctors and nurses can speak freely to about, you know, your medical circumstances and what they're doing. And that is probably something that would be helpful. Certainly something you'd want to give to the person named in your advance directive. And then maybe other family members who would be interested and are in a position to help.
Great. Lots of forms we need to fill out, though.
Well, at least four. So you'd have at least a will and a power of attorney, advance directive, and a HIPAA release. Something I forgot to mention, even if you have a trust, we were talking about trusts and wills earlier. Even if you have a trust, it doesn't mean you should not have a will also. You usually have both, but your will becomes a more simple document because your trust explains where you want your things to go. We as lawyers advise wills as well because, you know, as time goes on, I expect my clients to forget things like I do. And so we forget that we have a trust and we're in a hurry and we don't put an asset in the trust. This happens because, you know, people buy and sell cars often. We may move and open and close bank accounts often. Well, we forget that we have this trust here and we need to title the car in the name of the trust, or the bank account has to be owned by the trust. And so there are some circumstances that I've had as a lawyer helping folks where there was a trust and a long time ago and people moved and, oh my gosh, there's all these bank accounts and things that are outside of the trust. It's not because, you know, it was unintentional, they forgot. But if there's no will, then gets divvied up according to the state statute we were talking about. Maybe not in the way you want. So you want to make sure you have a will with a trust that says, hey, everything I have, if I haven't accounted for it in my trust, I want it to go there. So that would be the direction. A simple will pointing all your assets to the trust.
If a family had that to take care of and the person had a will and a trust, but they hadn't moved all that into that, could you help them do that after the person dies?
After a person who creates a trust has passed away, everything is pretty much static. Everything is where it's going to be, and we can't really change anything.
Okay.
Sometimes it turns out that people were forward-looking enough where they may have signed titles to cars, and that, of course, helps because that turns things over. Sometimes people are forward-thinking, and I advise clients that if they're uncomfortable with their bank accounts being into the trust, because sometimes that's a hassle to change your bank account. If you have automatic payments or automatic deposits, it takes a while for that Social Security check to be rerouted, probably a couple months. So there would be a period of time where you might have two different accounts. You know, you'll have one account, the old account, to receive your automatic deposits until they transfer to the new account. And that can be confusing to folks, but it's not difficult to do. It's just a little time consuming. So
the bank accounts would be in the name of the trust
rather than
just the individual.
That's right. And the point of what I was trying to say is that if you're uncomfortable with transferring it into the trust, you need to at least go to your bank and name the people who will receive your bank account after you pass away. And you can do this by going to your banker and asking that they appoint somebody as a death beneficiary on your account. And so the concept here is that all your assets have to be spoken for. They all have a place to go, after we pass away. So you could have a death beneficiary on your account, and that takes the property, and it automatically becomes the other person's upon presentation of a death certificate.
What about life insurance policies? Should they have a beneficiary to put it into the trust, or should they be into the trust, or can they just go to your heir that you want them to go to?
Well, it sort of depends on the purpose you purchase the life insurance policy for. I think, generally speaking, if the only reason was to provide for some money for folks to get by and to pay, any expenses you might have, or as a large gift, then you want them to get the money sooner than later. If you point your life insurance policy to be distributed to your trust, you're automatically delaying when they're going to get the payment, because for a trust to be distributed, you have to, like we mentioned, you have to find out who all the creditors are. You have to pay taxes first. And then after all that's done, you can distribute. So there would be a delay.
Yeah.
So I advise folks not to point their life insurance towards the trust, but just to let the beneficiaries provide a death certificate to the insurance company, and the insurance company then will be in touch with them and can distribute the funds directly. The same goes for IRA investments. You can add a death beneficiary there, and the funds will be directed to those people. Same way with a 401k retirement plan. You could also have death beneficiaries. Usually when you set it up, it would be a requirement to name somebody. If you just don't name anybody, it automatically goes to your estate. So then at that point, it'd be really important to have a will, of course, to direct where these things are going, where's the money going.
Great advice from Gloria Hahn's special guest expert, Attorney Joe Kaufman, available at area code 503-722-3850. That's 503-722-3850. And Joe's website is jqkaufmanlaw.com. More with Joe and Gloria next on Real Estate Today, sponsored by the Hahn Team on 93.9 KPDQ.
At the intersection of heart and home, Gloria Hahn and the Hahn Team.
You're listening to Real Estate Today, sponsored by the Hahn Team on 93.9 KPDQ. Mike Lee here with Gloria Hahn of the Hahn Team. And her very special guest expert today is Attorney Joe Kaufman.
Welcome back. We've been talking about wills and trusts and directives and all the things that you need to protect your family in advance of your passing. Do we need to say any more about the benefits of probate or the requirements? I think we've pretty much gone through
So I could just mention one thing. Probate gets a bad rap. Everybody is afraid, oh, this is going to be so expensive and so time consuming. And, of course, it hits us at a time of life when, we much rather be doing anything else but dealing with lawyers and accountants and courts.
Right.
We want to be grieving the loss of, someone who's dear to us. But this is something we have to do. And, the good news is you don't have to do it immediately. And, in fact, most of the time it takes about, a month or two to kind of get ready for this sort of thing. And so don't feel pressed to pick up the phone, the day after someone has passed to press ahead. There's no requirement there, and you might be making things harder on you than you need to. But know that it has to happen soon. That's all, I think. And then probates add a certain finality to things as well.
Right.
For instance, if you think every family's different. Most of the time, everybody's getting along fine. But, there's some circumstances where there's disagreements about assets and where they go from promises long made and gone forgotten sometimes.
Right.
And anyway, that's what the court is for, though, to resolve differences. And so if you think those things could happen in a family, then the probate court is totally fine. That's the way to resolve differences. Even if you have a trust, if there are differences of opinion, you're going to end up in court to resolve those differences unless you can solve them in a different way. And so I oftentimes the way to resolve those is get a family mediator involved if that's something that you think would be beneficial and that you could reach a final resolution to with.
So under normal conditions, if you have everything in a trust and you've got it all in there, you don't have to go through probate.
That's correct. As long as all your assets are in that trust. So that's partially the lawyer's job. And then unfortunately, mostly our clients' work because of course we're not authorized to put your bank accounts in the trust or anything like that. We can advise you to do that and point you in the right direction and then check up and make sure.
Right. But, okay. Perfect. Well, I guess the one thing that always comes up that people don't think about until it happens are the estate taxes. Do you want to talk about that now?
Oh boy, estate taxes.
Oh yeah.
Well, I am no accountant, so I can't, I won't claim to know all and be all, but it is important to realize that, you know, your estate could be taxed in Oregon. So there's two different kinds of taxes when it comes to estate taxes. People hear about inheritance tax. Inheritance tax is when we, as people who receive gifts from an estate, get something and there'd be a tax on that. Well, good news, Oregon doesn't have a tax like that.
Oh, good.
So that's the good news. But we have something called an estate tax. So basically, when we open an estate or even have a trust, trusts aren't immune. So if you have a trust, it doesn't mean you escape the tax man. Even if you have a trust, you have to figure out if there's a tax. And so it's paid out of the estate or out of a trust before any money is distributed to anybody else. So it is figured on it's figured on the gross assets of your estate, meaning every conceivable asset you have, life insurance, 401ks, IRAs, properties, both in the state of Oregon and outside the state of Oregon, investment accounts, money in the bank, your house, maybe, and your vacation house, things like this, the gross amount. So whatever, you know, if you sit down and figure out your net worth or you ask your accountant to assist you in doing that, if you end up with a gross net worth over $1 million, that part of your estate that exceeds $1 million will be taxed in Oregon. So we get our first $1 million for free, as it were, so no tax. And that's actually probably the majority of people. That most people won't have an estate tax. But, you know, if you're in a metropolitan area and you've, or even not, and you've had your home for a long time, you probably are an accidental millionaire. You're rich in a house and land, but maybe cash poor.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, you're going to have a gross estate over $1 million, and the people who are winding up your estate are going to have to come up with money to pay that estate tax.
Now, is that figure like on your house, say your house is worth $1 million, but you still have a $500,000 mortgage. Is that gross after that mortgage is paid off or before?
You know, I'm not quite sure. That's where you might seek an accountant.
Okay.
I believe it would be, remember, this is your gross value. I think you would take away that amount.
Seems like
you would have to pay.
Yeah. Okay.
If for any mortgage or what have you. But something to look for. The thing to know about estate taxes is when they're due. If someone passed away, now this is getting further away now as time goes by, but if someone passed away before in 2022 and before, the estate tax is due within 9 months of that person's death. And so obviously if that happened in a family where it's way past due, but there are ways to provide an extension of time to pay that tax. Now this tax again is paid to the state of Oregon. After that time, after 2022, if a person passed away, you have 12 months from the date someone has passed away in order to pay their estate tax, which still isn't a lot of time because you're thinking, no, the first 3 months may not be a great, the greatest time in anybody's life. And so that leaves even a shorter amount of time. Mm-hmm. So, it's really important to think of that ahead of time, I guess, you know, as we plan our estates, to make sure people are aware whether they may have an exposure to this estate tax or not. Again, it starts at $1 million and goes up. It's a graduated tax, meaning that if you have just barely over $1 million, you're going to pay 10% tax on that amount that exceeds $1 million. But it's a graduated tax. It goes up to 16%. And so when we're talking lots of zeros behind the comma, it really adds up quick. And if you're not prepared and have liquid assets, it could be quite a burden on your heirs to figure out, where am I coming up with the money? Really important with farm families, people who have a lot of land, to think about this, or people who have homes that have appreciated substantially, and, you know, accounts that are maybe not so liquid. Maybe they're investments or something of that nature. So something may have to be liquidated, or there has to be some funds available to pay this.
When we talked before, you said that you could, like our bank accounts can have a beneficiary, a death beneficiary, investment accounts. Even though you do that, are those still included in your estate?
They still are included in your estate for the calculation of the tax.
Okay.
Yes. There was some, it seems pretty low. Oregon and Massachusetts are the two states that have the lowest ceiling for when an estate tax is triggered. Many states around us have no estate tax at all, or have a higher ceiling for when it begins. For the state of Washington, it's slightly higher. I think it begins at a couple hundred thousand dollars more than in Oregon, but still close to $1 million mark. But that's why we have lots of snowbirds in Oregon. So
right.
if you're blessed and you have substantial assets, it may become worthwhile to call your residence in your home, Arizona or Nevada or Idaho or just about anywhere else, and come visit Oregon. Instead, if you should pass away and you're a resident of those states, you wouldn't have a state tax.
Really?
But
even if you were
there, may be other taxes, but right. you know, they get us coming and going. So,
is there a federal tax on estates?
There is no federal tax.
It's
state driven.
State. Okay.
There is a tax, though. Some people get this mixed up with a state tax. When you have a will and have a probate estate, that probate estate is a taxable person so far as calculation of taxes. And if you have a trust, that trust has a tax EIN number, a tax identification number, and it's also a taxable person so far as the governments are concerned. If we sell property out of a probate estate, like you and I have experienced, Gloria, where a home is sold and then the proceeds are going to be distributed to the beneficiaries or to pay creditors, the estate has earned income, and that income will be taxed. So same as with a trust. If a trust divests money out of a investment, they'll realize a gain, and that gain is taxable. If property is sold out of a trust, they're going to have income. That gain is taxable too. So it's not as if those aren't taxable entities, but there's only so many things we can do to avoid tax. The idea is to pay your fair share, I guess.
I guess. If you have a trust, then do you have to file an annual tax return, or just when someone passes?
During our lives, when we have a trust, we usually create revocable trusts. Revocable trust for the purpose of tax is called an invisible entity to the tax person.
Okay.
It really doesn't exist for tax purposes until we die. So it sort of springs to life when we pass on. And is there to take care of our things. But during our life, nothing really changes. The trust bears our Social Security number as a tax identification number, and it doesn't really become a taxable entity until after we pass. We pay the taxes for the trust, or any income we make, even if it's in a trust.
Got it.
The word I was searching for is trusts are considered a pass-through entity.
Okay.
Meaning that the government looks past it, just to us who own the trust.
Are there any ways to minimize these taxes?
There's not a lot of ways, but there are a few. So if you have a great deal of assets, there are some specific kinds of trusts that you could enter into that might shield some of the money or things from taxes. And you would want some specialized advice if you're in that sort of a bracket. Otherwise, if you don't have that much and they're not going to use those sort of trusts, which are quite complicated, but you need them. So, you know, and there's specialized attorneys who do that sort of work. If you're not quite there, though, the other ways to minimize is, and, you know, if you have a little over a million or something, you can start gifting it. You can give it to people who you intend to have the money or things anyway. And then I always tell folks, well, then you get the gratitude back that, right. That you gave a gift and,
right.
and also can enjoy seeing it being used the way, and appreciated the way you would like. Of course, if you're still enjoying that thing, well, don't give it away, of course.
Right.
But, the idea here is at some point we probably will need things less than we do, at other times in life. So you can give, gifts to people to lower it. Another way you can do it is create an irrevocable trust to remove the asset out of your name and put it in the name of a trust that you can't control and that you don't own. So sometimes that, like I say, you usually point these towards people who are going to get things anyway. So you could, for instance, if you have a beach house or a cabin and you know you want it to go to a specific family member or members, then, you could put it in an irrevocable trust and have one of those family members be the trustee, the person in charge. But, the trust is there to serve all the family members. They'd all be the beneficiaries. So they could use that house or asset any way they want. But it removes it from our estate. So if we die, we'll see that, that's not a part of our estate at all.
Oh, so it isn't included.
If we remove it. We cannot control it. We cannot own it.
Got it.
So that's one of the... That's one of the things. The other way is we can simply gift things, of course. There's limits to gifting. Mm-hmm. And you should talk to an accountant about this. But basically here there's an $18,000 per person gift limit per year. And that's the general rule of thumb. But there's also a lifetime gift exemption. So if you happen to give somebody a great deal more within a year, you would file a different form with the IRS to let them know that you fall in a different exemption group and you wouldn't be taxed. So the funny thing about gifting is it's taxed. The person receiving the gift isn't taxed. It's the person giving the gift that's taxed if it exceeds a certain amount. Most people will never be taxed because of these two exemptions.
Great information, Joe. I'm sure we've got a lot of people out there with a lot more questions. So if you're out there and you don't have a will and you don't have a trust and you don't know what you're doing with any of this, like I am, give Joe a call. I think it's worth the call. It's worth the appointment to go in and sit down and try to figure out where they are.
Oh, thanks, Gloria. Always happy to talk to anyone, of course.
You still have time for new clients?
Oh, yeah, of course. But maybe, if we get busier and busier, it may take a little more time, but
yeah.
always welcome to talking to folks.
Great. Is there anything else? We have about a minute left. Is there anything else that you think is really important that we tell our folks?
Well, I guess just important to pre-plan. It's never too late. I procrastinated quite a long time, but I think it's really important if you have a family and children and you have newborns or something, you have to think about who's going to be the guardian for those people and who's going to take care of money. That would be a conservator to care for those kids. So you're really doing a disservice to your family if you don't have some planning, and it isn't hard or expensive to do. There are employers out there, if you're a public employee of the state of Oregon or a school district, and some unions, and even some private industry offer legal insurance. I encourage people to look into that. It'll lower the cost and sometimes eliminate the cost of estate planning, because oftentimes creating a trust and a will is free of charge if you pay a small premium through your employer benefit plan, or it can be provided to you at a reduced rate. So I highly encourage people to look into that too.
Yeah, that sounds like a great benefit. Well, thank you so much for being here today. You've given me a lot of answers for my own estate planning, which I need to get on. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners as well. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Gloria.
You can find out more information at Joe Kaufman's website, jqkaufmanlaw.com, with offices in Estacada and Oregon City. Call Joe at 503-722-3850. That's 503-722-3850. Gloria Hahn, thanks so much for bringing guest experts to the program that inform us of things we really, really need to take care of. And thank you for listening to Real Estate Today, sponsored by the Hahn Team on 93.9 KPDQ.